Blog Talk Radio.
And now, please welcome the president of Kulabushikai Karate Association International, 8-degree black belt, instructor, United States Marine Corps veteran, and one of the first generation black belts of Grand Master Ferdinand T. Bigard, the founding father of the Kulabushikai Karate.
Just entered the arena where the thoughts and ideas of warriors, men and women of honor, are expressed and respected. This is the Kulabushikai Karate Association International Radio Show. We carry on the legacy and work of Grand Master Ferdinand T. Bigard, late great founder of the Kulabushikai Karate Dukenpo system, to make the benefits of martial arts available to all. On this program, our most important guest is you. In this hour, we'll be discussing the world of martial arts, competition, defense systems, contributing to a brighter future, expert guests, but most of all, taking your comments and questions. To join the live discussion or listen by phone, dial 347-989-1016 or on the web, www.kbkkia.com. Then click the KBKKI Radio Show link and listen in online.
And now, please welcome the president of Kulabushikai Karate Association International, 8-degree black belt, instructor, United States Marine Corps veteran, and one of the first generation black belts of Grand Master Ferdinand T. Bigard, the founding father of the Kulabushikai Karate Dukenpo martial arts system, Hal T. Haywood.
Push! Welcome to the Kulabushikai Karate Association. I want to first start by welcoming our family and fans of KBK, new and old, to practicing and aspiring martial artists of all systems, styles, and cultures. I want to especially acknowledge and extend a warm welcome to Mrs. June Bigard and Brittany Bigard Brown, the beloved wife and daughter of our late great teacher, Grandmaster Ferdinand T. Bigard Jr., the founding master of the Kulabushikai Karate Dukenpo martial arts system, which we practice, teach, and continue to build. Martial arts, although originally conceived to condition the mind and body of warriors for the defense of honor, it has evolved and blossomed over the centuries into a powerful tool to unify and motivate, to forge lifelong friendship, and create opportunities from some of the most challenging circumstances imaginable. Grandmaster Bigard understood the power of martial arts to liberate students, to attain the seemingly impossible, and to achieve what our surroundings might suggest is out of reach. We are thankful for God's grace in allowing us all to unite as warriors against ignorance, hopelessness, division, and fear. I believe all share in the belief that the future is bright for us. KBK and the martial arts world. Our children. And
let me just give you a quick reflection of Master Bigard. I met Master Bigard in the late 80s during a martial arts tournament, and he took me to the side and said, "Boy, your legs are out of control." I said, "Well, you know, what do you mean?" He said, "You got too much control. You need to hit somebody. You got to hit them."
And welcome to the Kulabushikai Karate Association International Radio Show. We are very excited. We are starting a new series today. Hope everyone had a great holiday. Enjoyed your summer. Get back to school for many of those who are in school, children going to school and so forth. Parents, of course. You go when they go. We all go, right? So we welcome you to the show today, and I just want to just talk a little bit. I think almost everyone can relate to the exciting moment with sports enthusiasts and those who are drawn with interest to a combat scene, whether in a movie or in real competition, ignites in contact between warriors. It even transcends the fear of injury sometimes at that flashpoint where the adversaries are tested and a winner generally emerges. But what that moment really speaks to us about is often years of training and conditioning that prepares the individual for the battle before them. So then it's fair to say, or it seems fair to say, by way of analogy, that martial arts as an art has as much to do with the tempering of the steel and the sharpening of the edge as it does with delivering that one decisive cut. Today, let's consider that each time the point or edge hits it, the sword is sharpened and a bit of its metal is worn away. On the other hand, the environment and conditions under which it's maintained on a regular basis can be what determines how long it remains in useful service. Let's think of ourselves for a moment as that sword. And that leads us into today's topic on the Kuroba Shikai Karate Association radio show. Today we're starting a series of shows discussing training, teaching methods, and practices that take into account the long-term potential benefits and health problems that each practitioner can face. And while none of what we talk about in this broadcast is to be taken as medical advice for diagnosis or treatment of specific disorders, well, of course you should consult your licensed healthcare provider for that. We do hope to stimulate a robust dialogue among you, our panelists, our callers, and to talk about ways that we can consider our future, consider how we maintain our health, how we benefit from practice of martial arts, and how we kind of minimize the problems that can come later on. So right now we'll take a break, and after that we'll welcome our panelists and we'll get things rolling. So we'll take a little break right now.
We may not be able to predict how long we'll be around, but we can have a positive impact on the quality of those years. Healthy choices means a lifestyle in which we make a conscious decision to eat the purest, most nutrition-rich foods available. It means avoiding smoking, excessive alcohol consumption, and not using unprescribed or unneeded drugs. And one of the healthiest habits that we can develop and maintain is regularly scheduled exercise, tailored to our own abilities and goals. Because the body should be moving, staying flexible and staying strong. Your heart, lungs, limbs, and brain will be very grateful. And you know what? So will your loved ones. Because fitness is for life.
Well, we're back. And as I mentioned before, for those of you who are just tuning in, we are just starting a new series, and we're talking about things along the line of preventive health as it relates to our training, our methods of teaching, the way we practice martial arts. In medicine, widely practiced in the United States and Europe, for example, preventive health care. In the Chinese medicine, the term qigong emerges. Qi, with regard to the body, refers to the energy or vital force that circulates throughout the body, and gong, which means something having been accomplished or cultivated through training and repetitive practice. As far as differences are concerned, it seems in the West we talk a little bit more about the training and the practice and the experience of the physician, while it seems like in the East the discussion turns more to the efforts and daily exercise of the person being treated in order to overcome illness or to maintain health. Now, I mean, we all obviously want to know what your thoughts are on this. And we have with us today, I think Grandmaster Haywood is with us today.
Of course.
Good evening,
everyone.
Welcome to the show.
Enjoy the show.
All right. Thank you so much. So as far as that thought on the different schools of thought with regard to medicine, we're not medical experts, and we're not trying to be medical experts, but we want to talk about what people are talking about. We want to talk about what the buzz is when we think about maintaining health in later years after having practiced martial arts for many years, most of us, and then considering what the benefits will be later on, or what we might need to be a little bit careful about, and what we might see coming down the road, and how we can prevent any problems and that sort of thing. So what do you hear normally from people about these kinds of things?
Well, from over the years, listening to and watching students of all ages, some of them have carefree attitudes when it comes down to health or injuries. They figure, hey, I'm going to go out and work out, strengthen my body, and it's not going to happen to me. I'm not going to get hurt. Or some, they say, when they sign their children up, hey, what about the risk? What about the injuries? And that instructor has to be knowledgeable about those risks when they explain it to the parent or explain it to an adult student. And a lot of students may be aware of the risk in martial arts or any type of other training, football, basketball, but they overlook those that when they get in the gym or on the training floor, and they figure that while they're training, they're strengthening their bodies. Some go home, some on vitamins, some take, eat right, they train right, so they think, and they trust their instructors to train them right so that they don't get injuries. But those things do happen. Injuries do occur.
Sure.
People don't eat right. They figure just training will get them strong, and the food that they eat, and they don't rest right. There's all type of things that are elements in this that rise this conversation. And to me, it's a great conversation because I trained over the years. I played a lot of sports, swimming, basketball, football, track. I was considered all-around athlete. I may have not been the best athlete in all those areas, but I was involved in all those different types of sports. And when I was in those sports, just talking about me for a second, I never thought about the risk of getting injured, and I did get injured. I thought I'd get well real quick. Being young, you don't think about certain things, and then when you get older, you think about, hey, I can't go out and do that anymore, which is something you can, but you just have to be smart and educated about it, you know, and take your time, whether it's your diet, whether it's the gym, exercise, you know, all those type of different things.
Well, I mean, you bring up some great points in there, and that also gives us an opportunity to share some of what we'll be talking about in the upcoming weeks. We will be talking about neurological health. We'll be talking about bone and joint, protecting your bones and joints. We'll also be touching on nutrition, of course, which you can't do anything without considering proper nutrition that you mentioned just a minute ago, and other issues and topics that all add into keeping in mind and protecting what you can of your health. I mean, as you mentioned, there are injuries. There are always, in any sport, there are going to be some injuries. In fact, you might not be in sports at all. You can get an injury, stub your toe, get hit by a swinging door.
Some of us are injury prone.
That's right. But what can we do to harden our bodies and our systems against the long term effects of those things? And that's why we're also considering the part that medicine and an understanding of different areas of medicine to a layman's degree will be helpful as we go forward. I also should add here, you know, that there is among many of us an argument that some, and there may be some truth to it. I'll open this to call you, the callers, and also to some of our experts online, is that we spend so much time, many times, discussing and perfecting technique, and we work on our preparation for a competition and the application aspect of martial arts, that all too often the health benefits and the health science related to what we do and teach takes a far back seat, even sometimes a non-existent back seat. And let's talk about that as well. I mean, you know, just like you mentioned, you know, coming up, there is that attitude of invincibility that in many cases accompanies youth. But what about as far as instructors, you as an instructor, and as far as some of the instructors you've known, taking time to really emphasize how to maintain and how to improve your chances for a better health and better outcomes in the later years. How much of that do we see? And I just ask you to comment on that.
Well,
I'll see as much of it as me in certain cases as we could see.
Well, yeah,
and I do.
Well, we
see
a lot of
treat it. Go ahead.
Well, we
go
see
ahead.
A lot of instructors. You know, it depends on how you are involved with other instructors.
Sure.
And you pick their brains for what they know. Some instructors, you know, they're in that field, they're in the medical field, so. They,
mm-hmm.
Or they know someone that's in the medical field, so they ask questions. Sometimes, you know, in the day and age we live in now, you can go online and you can, like the topic
sure.
we're talking about, you can study that topic. You can get on, you know, you can learn things on your own. But a lot of instructors, you know, they came up like, you know, especially the older instructors, they may have came up with that hardness. Hey, look, you fall, you get up, you're okay, you move on. And ignore an injury of a student. And then there's those instructors that they're more knowledgeable about injuries, so they watch that student.
Mm-hmm.
Even though that student may say, "Oh, I'm okay," the student
sure.
goes home, come back a couple of days, "Oh, I can't train because of this injury," you know, which is in all sports.
Sure.
That hard edge, that instructor, or that hard edge parent, or that hard edge student. That
yep.
oh, I'm okay. I'm hurt.
Yeah.
I'll be all right in about a couple of days or a week. And sometimes those injuries last a lifetime. But
sure.
as far as the instructors and talking to those instructors, you know, I've run across some instructors that are very knowledgeable about sports and sports healing and injuries
mm-hmm.
today, because they don't want, you know, they want to. Bring down the chances of lawsuits,
of losing students,
or parents pulling their students out because, hey, look, my child's head got rocked back in his nose, hey, he just got braces. I can't
right,
let him
right,
in the
right.
ring or, you know, a special mouthpiece. There's, you know, today there's all kind of special gear, like eye gear, head gear.
Sure.
Protective gear, mouthpieces, to aid those injuries or aid not to get injuries. So a lot of instructors today are studying those things.
Sure, sure. And what do you think about the publicity of the NFL and brain injuries and in sports and that sort of thing? How much do you think that plays on? Do you think that has a much effect in the martial arts world, or do you think the martial arts world was already ahead of that curve?
Well, I think both of them. I think mm-hmm. the martial arts were not saying that they're ahead of it, but they are aware of it. And
mm-hmm.
now that it's out there in the atmosphere and people are hearing things through the internet, through television, through the radio,
mm-hmm.
or through magazines, they are learning about this. So,
sure.
you know, like I said, those hardcore instructors and athletes that overlooked injuries, they are now hearing things. Like I hear
mm-hmm.
it. I don't know much about the NFL. But I do. I'm aware that not, and I hear that they are trying to protect the ball players, the athletes.
More so than ever, trying to protect
protect the martial arts students.
Sure,
that's what's going on now. You know, it takes time to learn these things, but at least we are trying to learn. Because years ago, I never really paid much attention to injury. I was always aware of it, and I've been injured a lot over the years in different sports. But I just get up and rub it off, dust my clothes, and keep on going. And some of those injuries later on in years came back because I stopped training. Once you stop training, your body starts to relax and go back into, hey, just a natural way of life. You're not as strong as you used to be, so now you feel the injury. Where did that come from? Then you're reminiscing, oh, man, I remember when I hurt that years ago. But years ago, if you had known about different ways to heal or repair that injury, you know, 10 years, 20 years later on down the line, you would be in a better situation.
That's also one of the topics that we'll be talking about in the coming weeks. Part of this series is injury repair, and we are actually going to dedicate a full program on that, as well as some of the other aspects that I mentioned earlier. And this is really,
another thing.
Really good. Go right ahead.
Another thing, a lot of these athletes today, in martial arts that I hear, you know, just talking to some of the instructors of today, these students are trained different now. They train better than we train. You know, I'm not going to say all the way or a lot better, but they are training different. They're training so that they don't get hurt.
Right. Would you say a little more science is involved today? With that, a little more science is involved now. Yeah,
because the instructors are more like we're just talking about the NFL and what's out there now. They're hearing things, and students today they don't want to get injured. So, we had a show on tournaments. Now the way they fight now with all the special equipment that they have to wear, and plus they don't try to hurt each other. The mental state is, hey, I'm not trying to hurt you. I'm just trying to get a point.
Years ago,
I'm going to hurt you and get a point. I'm going to get a point. If I don't get a point, I'm going to hurt you.
I remember the difference from when I first started back in the early 70s. And when I came back from the military and I returned back to Grandmaster Bigard, he was talking to me about different ways of stretching. You know, that we find that there's new science on stretching, new science on what you do with your neck. And of course, they had instituted the safety kicks, the foam fighting gear, you know, by then, and that started coming in. So there was a whole transition during that time from what, like you said, like you mentioned, the old school approach to, you know, head hunt, rock that head, to okay, we're in it. This is a competition. It's a sport.
Goes back to football also too. You get back, you get a concussion. You get a concussion. You wouldn't tell your football coach. I know I wouldn't. I wouldn't tell my
I didn't know what a concussion
coach.
Was.
I was hurt.
Yeah, I didn't even
I never,
know what a concussion.
Neither did I. I knew I had a headache. I knew I was dizzy for about an hour, I even got back on the football field.
Didn't
I would not
even,
say anything. Even
right. How simple.
I was just at a tournament. I was at a tournament
right?
recently. I was
go
at,
ahead.
Say it again.
Hello. Go right ahead.
I was at a tournament a couple of weeks ago, and I was refereeing this ring. Well, it was a children's ring. He had to be about 9 years old, that age group, and these kids were going at it. They were real good. I mean, they could fight. And one of the kids did a jumping spinning kick and hit the ground real hard. His knee hit the ground. The instructor runs in the ring. You know, I'm standing there, but the instructor ran there because the kid was crying, wobbling. Nobody could control him. You know, he was like out of control, and they thought he was just acting. But I heard his knee hit the ground, and me being an instructor also, I said, he really hit the ground. The instructor said, boy, stop all that wilding and crying. He calmed it down, but the kid was not listening. Oh, my knee, I'm hurting.
Sure,
and
sure.
I said, well, and I told the kid, I said, well, if you don't explain to your instructor or anyone where it hurts, then you're not going to help anything. Eventually, he calmed down. He told him where it really hurt, and his instructor said, "Boy, get up. You okay? Get back in the ring. Go ahead on." I saw the kid wobbling. After the match, he was walking around limping and hurt.
Right, right.
I don't know how serious the injury was, but to me, the way he hit the floor, I was right there. I saw it. I heard it. I've hit that floor too plenty of times, so I know the difference.
Sure. Yeah, but it's straight down on your knee. I mean that's definitely a red flag
for a 9-year-old.
For anybody when you're straight coming down on your knee, you know that would be a moment where probably in a football game they throw some ice on that, put that person on the sideline for a minute.
Well, in martial arts, you know, so they may get ice also, or you may not get the ice. It's like in football, you get a concussion, you might just go sit. Hey, go sit over there on the bench till you can see again till the clouds clear. Smoke clear.
And then go back in.
Get back in, right.
But that's
you're not
a
baby
example.
Anymore. Boy, get up and get back in the ring.
Sure, sure. Then that's another example of some of the attitudes and some of the I guess you could
that's
say
considered old-time sports medicine.
Yeah, get of up. Course. We're going to go ahead
back
and take a little break right now. Excuse me, Gary. So we're going to go ahead and take a little break right now and give some other callers a chance to come in, and we'll be back in a few minutes to continue this very interesting topic on maintaining health while practicing martial arts at its peak.
There are many important numbers in our lives. A birth date, the address where a cherished family event will happen. Winning lotto numbers would be great to have, but there is one number that we should all have at our fingertips. That number is 800-222-1222, because that is the number to the Poison Center anywhere in the United States. 800-222-1222 will get you immediate assistance for exactly what to do in the event that someone is poisoned. Children 6 and under are, of course, at risk, so we keep those cleaning chemicals locked out of reach. But did you know that twice the number of children are poisoned each year by cosmetic and personal care items? There's a substantial number of accidental poisonings among teenagers due to sometimes well-meaning prescription drug sharing. That's why everyone, especially everyone with a phone, should have 800-222-1222. Saved and readily available. The next successful rescue could be yours. There are many important numbers in our lives. A birth date, the address where a cherished family event will happen. Winning lotto numbers would be great to have, but there is one number that we should all have at our fingertips. That number is 800-222-1222, because that is the number to the Poison Center anywhere in the United States. 800-222-1222 will get you immediate assistance for exactly what to do in the event that someone is poisoned. Children 6 and under are, of course, at risk, so we keep those cleaning chemicals locked out of reach. But did you know that twice the number of children are poisoned each year by cosmetic and personal care items? There's a substantial number of accidental poisonings among teenagers due to sometimes well-meaning prescription drug sharing. That's why everyone, especially everyone with a phone, should have 800-222-1222 saved and readily available. The next successful rescue could be yours.
Welcome back. We were back in the show, and we were just talking about how some of what we're going to be doing in this series, and today is basically an introduction to the series on preventive health care for us who practice martial arts, to the way we train, the way we practice, and what we do that considers what you know how we'll fare going forward. Whether in the near future or as we reach our more mature years, and this is something that we believe is very very important to consider, because what we do now always sets up for whether it's the way we train to prepare for a tournament or whether it's the way we train for our next rating. How we train and what we do is always going to have an impact on how we make out later on. So we were talking about some of the things we see in tournaments and in dojos as to how students are led and instructed to consider, you know, hurting themselves. But we also have to bear in mind that these are individual choices. You know, I say I want that 180 split. And I want to get to it very, very quickly. I mean, unless there's somebody who's going to tap me on the shoulder and say, "Hey, you know, you have to pace yourself. There's a way to do this." Sometimes we because we want that, you know, we think we're no pain, no gain, and we're going to give it everything we got. But later on, you know, we may have some hip issues as a result of not executing that properly. So these are the kinds of things that we are going to be talking about in the coming weeks. And as I mentioned, this is basically an introduction. We want to lay a foundation. And so we're also talking about, the diversity of approach from healthcare systems throughout the world, because just to understand that, we hopefully it'll be informative to our listeners, and you'll find it interesting as well. And while there are many ideological differences and stark contrasts in the choices and methods of treatment within various medical systems, and we also want to bear in mind, we haven't even touched on different tribal medicine and cultural medicine practices that are far from what we would call mainstream, but they have been effective in certain cases. They've been shown to be effective in certain cases, and they've helped to inform the development of mainstream medicine. Some of the things that we practice today, and I was talking with Grandmaster Haywood, was mentioned a minute ago about how we've evolved quite a bit from let's say the older days when it was if you hurt yourself, well, you know, get there the best way you can as far as learning a new technique or stretching or different things like that. And if you got hurt during the tournament, it's like, hey, dust yourself off, come on, get back into it, maybe it's not that bad. And to now, where a lot more science seems to be applied in certain choices. Now, of course, some of it is motivated by wanting to minimize exposure, legal exposure, but also for care. We have more information. We can use it to care for our students better. We can use it to maintain our own health. So we're talking about those kind of things this week. And when you talk about those, when I mentioned those differences in all these different medical systems, there is one thing that they seem to all kind of agree on, and that is that they all talk about an energy force or life force. Whether it's in Western medicine, the Western neurology, they talk about words like neurotransmitters and receptors that fire electrical impulses to and from the brain. And in Eastern medicine, they talk about qi, meridians, and the cycles of meridians for stimulation, for stimulating the body's healing and that sort of thing. But in each, what's clear is that our bodies have an active, vital network designed to keep us in peak health. So what we're doing with all this is talking about how to listen to that, how to gain more information about it, how to apply certain things, how to apply changes in lifestyle or maintenance in some cases of healthy lifestyles and good practices, best practices or best known practices, to try to make sure that as we get older, we will maintain the ability, the flexibility, and the ability to recover when we do run into injuries and that sort of thing. I mentioned before, and to you, to those of you who are listening in, I know we can see that there are a lot of people listening in online, and you can call in. Even if you're listening in online, just dial through on the number. We are at 347-989-1016, and come on in. If you have any comments and questions, we welcome you into the show. As I mentioned before, and we'll be going over it the next few weeks, we'll be opening topics on neurological health, protecting bones and joints, nutrition, injury recovery, among some of the topics that we'll be featuring. And we look forward to hearing from you, as always. And that's what this show is all about. You know, obviously we want to put out good information, but we want the feedback. We want to make sure that your voice is heard and that some of your experiences can inform all of us. So please feel free to call in. And I know some of you like to just listen, and that's fine too. So as we were talking about how these things are looked viewed from one person to another and so forth. And also we talked about some of what is new in the media and so forth with regard to considering the long-term effects of any injuries or difficulties that a person may have as a result of having involved themselves in sports. And I open this for comment. I think that as martial artists, we do look a little more closely at the effect of what one thing does to another body, or what one thing does to the body, whether it be a technique, what it does to the body it strikes, or actually executing that technique. And so, Grandmaster Wilbert Darden, are you online, aren't you?
Yes, I'm online.
Yes, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure having you with us today. So with regard to students and injuries and how it affects you later on in life, what have you run into as far as, you know, talking to people in the martial arts world? And I mean, do you see more of that, oh, I'm invincible, I don't worry about that because it's not going to happen to me too much? Not that people actually say that, but do you see more of that kind of an attitude played out?
No, because anything is capable to happen. And just that the plan that we were training and we were taught different, you know, and more original. And the kids these days, I mean, kids now are training, are learning things, but they're not going through the hard training like we did. We're talking about the old system, the way we were taught.
Sure.
You know, we all hit that ground and got hurt and got back up and dust it off and go again.
Absolutely, you know? Absolutely.
And
so
as we got older, our bodies changed.
Sure. That's a good point that also tags on to something Grandmaster Haywood was saying earlier. You're saying the same thing. Not only does what we do make a difference, but our body's ability to tolerate it and process what we do changes as well. That's right?
Yeah, that's a friend and always there. Well, we always know what that means.
Yep.
So we get right back up and shake it off and continue.
Yep. And I have to say also that in those earlier days that you were talking about now right now, we actually spent a lot more time learning the proper way to execute a technique in many cases than I see nowadays in a lot of places. Now, I'm not saying that level or quality of instruction does not exist, but there are a lot of instances where I see punches being improperly formed, kicks being improperly thrown, and some students being moved up through the ranks even without that being corrected. And that as well can have a detriment on the feedback that the body gets from executing that technique. What do you think about that?
Well, that is true. Another thing is a key place to it is that we have classmates influence each other, that build each other up, like Leonard and Gerald. Once you know you can get past Leonard and Gerald, you can stand up there. You can stand up. You see what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
So those are the kind of kind of man that had legs, that had speed, and was like unorthodox. But if you could stand on their face there and take the blows and kicks, they're hitting you and helping you condition your body.
Sure.
Just like Sanchez. We studied too, and Sanchez said, I was doing Sanchez, all we do was kicking up our body, taking a blow and go on.
Sure, sure. Well, that too is of course how we train. It does make a huge difference how we train, how we condition our body. Because I mean, it is also a scientific or medical and scientific fact that the more you use your body in certain ways, the more it strengthens that part of your body, even with regard to punching and breaking. And, you know, you see people who do a lot of breaking, their bone density increases so that they're able to absorb more of the force of that strike, even though the goal is not to absorb the strike but to send the force through the object that you're breaking. The more that a person breaks, the more dense their bones get and their ability to do so. What are you about to say? Yeah. Were you about to say something, Grandmaster? Master Wilbert?
Yeah.
So this is where we are today, and these are the topics that we're going to be going into much more detail on in the weeks to come. And this is more we wanted to go ahead and introduce the topic, and we're going to take another quick break right now, and we'll be back with a little more for you after this break.
There are many important numbers in our lives. A birth date, the address where a cherished family event will happen. Winning lotto numbers would be great to have, but there is one number that we should all have at our fingertips. That number is 800-222-1222, because that is the number to the Poison Center anywhere in the United States. 800-222-1222 will get you immediate assistance for exactly what to do in the event that someone is poisoned. Children 6 and under are, of course, at risk, so we keep those cleaning chemicals locked out of reach. But did you know that twice the number of children are poisoned each year by cosmetic and personal care items? There's a substantial number of accidental poisonings among teenagers due to sometimes well-meaning prescription drug sharing. That's why everyone, especially everyone with a phone, should have 800-222-1222. Saved and readily available. The next successful rescue could be yours.
We're back, and we're continuing the lead up to our series on training and development that considers our future health, and Bishop Master Haywood, not to be mistaken with Grandmaster President Haywood. Well, we welcome you to the show today, and there was I think you had a thought.
Yeah, I actually did have a thought as I was listening, and you know, oftentimes I'm not able to really be in the show because, you know, I'm kind of running back office and so forth, looking at, you know, those kind of interacting with those in the chat room. And, you know, many of those that will come in, but they want to listen, but they don't really want to participate. And I'm pretty fascinated, you know, by this topic. But I remember back when we were training and we went to tournaments, you know, and this is not a condemnation, you know, at least I hope it's not a condemnation, you know, on the practices today. But I don't ever remember being injured, you know, in a tournament, you know, and we started with the ace bandages. Eventually we got the, you know, through the safety kicks and the safety punches and so forth, the safety chops. At that point, it wasn't safety punches, it was safety chops. But that was a while before we got those. We competed in tournaments and basically ace bandages and shin pads. And like I said, I remember getting hurt, but I don't ever remember being injured. And so, I guess the question I want to pose, were we trained, right? Or is there something wrong or something different as opposed to then and now? I mean, you know, I guess I'd like to pose that, you know, kind of to our panel here, Grandmaster Haywood and yourself, just to have a quick dialogue on that, if you don't mind.
Let me piggyback on your question with another thought as well. I mean, please let's bear in mind what you just started with. But is it possible that injuries, that because of the introduction of the safety equipment, that maybe there might be a little bit too much reliance on that as opposed to relying on the technique, being able to protect yourself a little better, and you know, in other words, is anyone looking at that as a safety cushion that allows you to expose yourself more than you would if you didn't have those things? Along with what Bishop Haywood was just saying, you know, about the differences. I mean, that's a very interesting question. You know, because I remember going through tournaments and it looks like nobody in our whole team really got hurt, so to speak. You know, I mean, nothing out of the ordinary that you might take a shot, you know, something like that, but nothing that where, you know, someone strained a muscle or threw a joint out or anything like that. Okay, any comments on that? Great, Grandmaster Haywood, you there?
Yes, I'm here. Well, yeah. On as far as injuries and past injuries and when you fought, that goes on today. People train, they get hurt, they get up, they brush it off. You don't hear from them for 2 or 3 weeks, or you don't see them until the next tournament, and you ask, hey, how you been? So, I was nursing this injury, but it's okay now. Oh, I'm all right. You know, they don't say what happened between this tournament or that tournament. Sure. A lot of people... as far as myself,
you know,
I'll be injured, I go to work.
But
what was the question?
The question that I was asking, though, is, you know, isn't it, because I think there is there a difference between being injured and actually, you know, getting hurt, you know, or am I drawing parallels that don't, that are not equal? Because I look at, well, hurt.
Go ahead.
With, you know, as taking a shot or getting kicked or getting wind knocked out of you, whatever the case is, the injury being something, you know, that is a little more permanent, you know.
Well, there's degrees of the injury. It depends on that degree of the injury. That injury was an injury that lasted 10 seconds, or was it an injury that lasted an hour or 2 weeks or a month or a lifetime? So, and you won't know.
Okay,
just talking about myself.
We would go at it. I guess what I'm saying is we would actually go at it, and Dudley, he actually, you know, brought the, I don't know if it was a question or comment or whatever it was, but he mentioned, you know, is there too much reliance on the equipment and the safety padding that's used today, and maybe, you know, is there a difference, because we didn't really have it. I mean, eventually we had it, you know, and that was some hard fighting going on, you know, in those days.
Well, I mean, I know for a fact that practitioners during the time when I was in it were looking for knockouts, and really pretty devastating shots, that wouldn't even be probably wouldn't even be allowed. In fact, you wouldn't even we might get a point, lose a point for trying a shot like that these days. Depending on where you're fighting, but the thing, one thing is that I guess it seems logical, and maybe, and I want to hear people panel weigh in on it, or some of you in the audience weigh in on it, that if you don't have it here, then you have to focus a lot more on protecting yourself. Not to say that you don't with the gear, but you don't have a safety because there's no concept of there's something to shield me from a blow to the head, or there's something to shield me from a blow, you know, to the ribs or what have you. So I mean, it's kind of built in. It's intuitive that you're gonna focus on a higher degree of defensive aspect as well as the offensive aspect of competing. And that just means, I mean, I'm throwing that out there for comment. Any thoughts?
I don't really know how to respond other than I think that it's necessary that we have, you know, some of the minimal safety equipment, you know, the safety kick, safety punches, the mm-hmm. head, guards, mouthpieces, going
sure.
and so forth. Those are some of the basic things. And, I often wonder, if it's, we were black belts. I've seen Grandmaster Haywood do 360s in the air and knock people down, nobody was severely injured. I've done front kicks, pick people up in the air, So the thing about it is, I'm wondering with this particular line and as martial artists, karate practitioners and so forth, should our discussion, is it reliance, too much reliance on too much equipment, or is techniques got to the point where there's either no control? Because they're green belts, orange belts, white belts. When we were coming up, we fought. So
right,
I don't necessarily know that it was just black belt control, because there were all levels, of ranks, that competed.
Well, I mean, to your point, I mean, I remember from being a white belt from the earliest rank that, that pretty basically we didn't go anywhere unless we understood how to execute a technique and to be able to control it. So, to that point, I think that it does have a lot to do with instruction and training, because control is something that, when you learn the technique and when you exercise and practice the technique, the ability to control the force of it has to do with how well you're trained to use it. And I think that again, that's subjective to the regimen of teaching. So yeah, absolutely. How does the other part?
Well, how do we used to handle wild fighters? There was wild fighters tournaments and class and whatnot. I mean, I'm not. Really,
I was gonna say
in
class
there,
too.
There's always been wild fighters. Grandmaster Haywood.
Yeah. Say again.
Well, I was asking because there's always been wild fighters, in tournaments
yeah.
and in school and what have you. And generally, how are those handled? Because even with those wild fighters, here's the thing. I'm just what's really I don't know what I'm pondering is, why weren't there as many injuries, or maybe am I just missing? Why weren't there as many injuries then that we can actually
Well, to me, there wasn't that many injuries, or there may have been a lot of injuries. People just never, said anything about the injuries. There may have been some injuries. But to me, we were trained a lot harder, and we were trained different than the fighters of today. Not saying that we trained better or worse, or they're better trained than we are, because there's some scientific trainers today, and they're health conscious, and they're injury conscious more than we were. We I don't think we paid as much attention to injuries or cared, or we got up and we brushed it off and went on and we continued training. And now, later years, we're paying for it. There's a lot of air in the background. Those those injuries that people got years ago, they don't really get today because of the equipment, because of the training, because of the knowledge that they have today. So on that being said, those wild fighters, they got injured. And they knew, hey, look, they when they was fighting wild, they were aware of it. They got injured. Mm-hmm. They didn't say anything. That's just my point of view on that one.
I think it's fair to say that there are two sides to it. There is the as far as the person who is delivering the blow or delivering the technique, you know, the condition or the control that they execute, and then there's also the other side of which is the condition of the individual who's on the receiving end of it, their ability to, you know, to defend or deflect the energy of it or to take the shot, you know, just being in better condition. I mean, there are both sides to that, and that's kind of why we're in the topic of talking about what we can do with our bodies to be able to be in the best shape that we can be to compete in this sport and activity, you know, because there, you know, obviously there's the other side too. There's the self defense aspects of it as well. But we talk a lot about the competition aspect because that is the controlled environment with an ongoing environment that we know we can be at a tournament every other month if we wanted to be, if you have the availability and resources for that, but you don't know when you're going to run into a situation in the street. But and that's the purpose for ongoing training and about how to put ourselves in a position for the best outcomes, no matter what the situation is, whether it's a competitive situation or a self defense situation or what have you, and how practicing regularly, how we end up when we get older as a result of it. So we're going to go to another break here, and we're going to get ready to wrap up the show. So we do thank you for joining us, and we will be back to wrap the show up and talk to you about our upcoming topics. So we'll be right back.
There are many important numbers in our lives. A birth date, the address where a cherished family event will happen. Winning lotto numbers would be great to have, but there is one number that we should all have at our fingertips. That number is 800-222-1222, because that is the number to the poison center.
Want to take this moment to thank everybody for joining in. We want to thank you, and we look forward to you joining us in the weeks to come as we talk about it and continue with the topics of maintaining our health and while practicing the wonderful arts that we practice. I want to say thanks to Grandmaster Haywood, our president. I want to say thanks to Bishop and Master Haywood, who also is the technical supervisor for our show. We want to thank thanks Master Darden, Master Wilbur Darden, for coming in today. And we will thank all of you again for joining in to us, and we look forward to hearing from you again on the show. Remember, you can dial in at 347-989-1016 or go online to kbkkia.com to listen to our show. We will be rebroadcasting it. We'll be back live the week after next, every second and fourth Sunday of the month. We'll be broadcasting live, so come and join with us. We look forward to an exciting show. We say have a great afternoon and ush.
Ush.
Yeah, I just want to express my gratitude because I'm sitting here listening, and it's like combined, what, y'all have a couple hundred years worth of knowledge between you? Right. It will be great. Like, I mean, if things can keep going the way they're going, I mean, keep passing those nuggets out. I mean, I have personal experience from training with some of you guys and having y'all as mentors, along with my own instructor, Bud Harrison, or Master Harrison. So, I mean, I just want to say thank you, and hello to all my brothers and sisters. Ush, y'all stay strong.
Ush.